Good afternoon, everyone. Today is the 2nd of May, and this is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. We are gathered here today to continue the public hearing on Senate Bill 5540. I'm going to go ahead and convene that public hearing. I want to note for the record that that Senator Johnson is excused. Senator Monroe is ill and may be joining us briefly, but he would be excused. Welcome, Senator Devlin. Thanks for bringing us a quorum today. And do you have anything to add for the record before we start back into our conversation on the service transformation project?
Nothing.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up service transformation project, and then we'll talk about Real ID. I just wanted to indicate for everybody that here in person or listening that the House is convening. Thank you. The House is convening at 2 o'clock. This panel will be able to continue. We're not required to have a quorum once we gavel in, but all the House members may disappear, and Senator Hansel will have the room to himself.
That's power. I can't believe it.
All right. Well, welcome back. Why don't you introduce yourself for the record, and we'll start in where we left off yesterday.
Great. Thank you very much.
Is your government?
Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, my name is Tom McClellan. I'm the DMV Administrator with the Oregon Department of Transportation, and we will be getting back into where we were yesterday with the DMV Service Transformation Program.
Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ben Kahn, Transformation Manager with DMV ODOT. As we mentioned earlier, SDP has issued an intent to award with Fast Enterprises, and on the screen you have a list of other states that have installed or are currently working with Fast to replace their legacy systems. A key strategy used to guide our procurement is finding a proven solution by requiring the vendor to prove that they have already successfully implemented their COT solution in another jurisdiction that ensures success. We can benefit from other lessons learned and be able to hit the ground running. We feel the vendor has successfully implemented their software solution, so they have already worked out the kinks in their product, and this will save DMV time and money with the initial implementation and with software upgrades and releases in the future.
So as we talked about yesterday, it is a 10-year program, but you will see benefits before 10 years. Those investments that we're making in the next couple of years will start to pay off fairly quickly for us. We will install and configure the commercial off-the-shelf system, and a vehicle title and registration system will be installed and put in place. We also anticipate a point-of-sale system for our field offices and other places in the organization, business licensing capabilities. We do regulate dealerships and wrecking yards and places, you know, different businesses like that in the state. So there's other secondary type systems that will be part of the core that we're replacing in this first rollout. Interfaces with federal, state, and other agencies that we have today have to all be replicated with the new system, so a lot of them will go into that. We anticipate tracking performance and productivity a lot better than we can today with more modern systems that have that capability. Foremost, though, this is more than just a technology program or set of projects. We're really going to be making changes fundamentally in the way our business is conducted and the way our customers, the people we serve, interact with us. Technology is an enabler for us in this situation. We do have very old systems that need to be replaced, but the real benefit will be in the way we're able to serve the public so much better in the future. We anticipate coming out the other side of this program much better than we are today.
So you're underway.
We've got a quorum.
All right, well, travel safely. Thanks for checking in with us.
Representative Gomberg, what we've added here is a slide here just to show over the last several years what has been happening with our staffing levels, and they're relatively flat, if not declining, over this period of time that's displayed here since 2010. But our transaction levels, our biggest transactions, our driver licensing, our title and registration type work, has actually grown by over 12% during that period of time. In essence, we're doing more with less. But if this is to continue, we have to have better tools. Our employees need better tools, and the services we're able to provide, both online and self-service capabilities, need to be improved in the future for us. So I think it's a nice graphic, basically, that shows that doing more with less, and for the future in this investment, we want to make sure that we're able to do as much as we're doing and maybe more in the future with as many employees as we have today and maybe about the same, actually. So that's our thought. So those are the slides we have with the Service Transformation Program. Do you have any questions at all before Mr. Kahn moves on?
Any questions? Representative Weirden.
I can't stand it. I don't know what COTS is.
Commercial off-the-shelf system or solution. But yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We throw that in a lot. I'm sorry.
I had all other kinds of ideas what that might be.
Were you finished, Representative?
I am. Thank
all
you.
Right, Representative Noble.
Thank you, Co-Chair. This one is really, Senator Johnson's not here, and I don't know all the ins and outs with the Department of Revenue computer software, but I do know that someone down along the line, since she's not here, is going to ask, how are you going to prevent what happened with Department of Revenue and what she termed yesterday as very complex and very, lack of being user-friendly, knowing that you're using the same vendor. And historically, some justified, some just perception of State of Oregon and computer systems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it's a confidence question.
Chair Gomberg, Representative Noble, and Ben, you can chime in as well. But anytime you have a very powerful system that you're installing, and we really are looking at a system that has a lot of capabilities, there's going to be some trade-offs we're going to make between user-friendly and capabilities. And what we plan to do is find a happy medium, basically, you know, as we move forward. We have a lot of confidence in this particular vendor. We showed the 9 states. They will do an advertisement, a promotion for this vendor if you call them. They're all very high on this particular vendor's capabilities. On time, on budget, which are typically your most important, you know, factors that you gauge whether you have a good vendor or not. This vendor has excellent track record, and we're really looking forward to engaging with a company like that. And there's a lot of factors that go into a successful project. And so we're learning from others' experiences. Department of Revenue is one of those agencies we've actually spent a lot of time with over the last few years because they have successfully rolled out sequentially improvements to their system. There's different phases that they've done. And for the most part, have been pretty satisfied with the results. Our peer to the north, Washington Department of Licensing, I'm in real close contact with their director, Pat Kohler, and I had an excellent experience with this vendor, Fast Enterprises, with the vehicle system being installed in December of last year. There are always going to be your punch list of things you have to take care of afterwards, and they certainly had a list of those, but they got the system they ordered, and they were able to configure it to meet their needs. So we're heading into this with a pretty high confidence level that we've picked a good vendor.
Very good. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you for those. All right. Well, then let's talk about Real ID. Thanks again.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask him if he would bet his pension on it.
He didn't, though. So again, Tom McClellan, Deputy Administrator of the Department of Transportation. Joining me is
Chair Gomberg and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation.
So we would like to give you an overview of the Federal Real ID Act, a bill that's in consideration as well during the session, give you an overview of that, and some of the policy questions that are actually, you know, facing the state right now as some deadlines are coming up fairly quickly. So just a little bit of background. This particular bill came out of the 9/11 Commission. It was signed into law by Governor Bush, President Bush, in May of 2005. It's been around a while. It took the federal government a couple of years to do their regulations, and originally had a 3-year time frame for states to comply. Successively, there were extensions granted and more time, you know, provided by the federal government. In 2007, Governor Kulikowski signed an executive order directing our agency to follow national standards around driver licenses and to do verifications of Social Security numbers that applicants provided to us. We were doing that with commercial drivers at the time, but not with our standard Class C driver's licenses. That was in November of 2007. In the 2008 special short session that we had, Senate Bill 1080 was passed. It provided a legal presence requirement for us, so that people had to prove that they were in the country legally with birth certificates and passports and those types of documents. That went into effect in 2008 and into 2009. We came back to the legislature in 2009 with a proposal to fully comply with the federal requirements, and we were told no, that our request was denied, our budget request, and the statutory changes that we proposed were all denied. Instead, a bill passed that said you shall not use, other than federal money, anything to try to comply. And that was passed in 2009. So that's been in place for a number of years. And we've dutifully come and provided reports every so often to legislative committees to give you the status. And during that period of time, 2013, I think it was December of 2013, the federal government, Department of Homeland Security, issued a schedule for enforcement, a gradually more incremental set of enforcement deadlines, starting with some of the federal agencies that Homeland Security was involved with, gradually adding nuclear power plants and military bases. Right now, the next enforcement schedule that's happening would be in January of next year. That's with TSA at airports for boarding domestic flights. They'll be looking for cards from compliant states or states that have extensions at that point in time. The final date that they put out there is in October of 2020, where they'll be looking for cards that have a certain designation on the card that's a compliant card. And that'll be at airports at that time, but also all the other federal buildings that are currently subject to the requirements. We've received a number of extensions. The first one came in October of 2014, and that first one, actually the first two extensions we received were for annual extensions. So the first one expired in October of 2015. We got another one till October of 2016. We applied for another extension last year. This time it was for 8 months. The current extension we have right now expires in next month, June 6th, 2017. The compliance gap that we have today includes things like the imaging of identity source documents, so that birth certificate and the passport and social security number and the card and things like that, that today someone presents to us, but we don't keep any copies of that. We accept it and we hand it back to the person. The federal regulations require that we keep an image of those documents and retain that. Use of electronic verification systems. We use several today, but there's some that we would have to use in the future to verify birth certificates, U.S. passports, checking with other states to make sure the person isn't licensed in another state, or if they come from another state, they've relinquished that driving privilege when they come to Oregon. There's a state-to-state system that several states are using right now that we would be required to use in the future as a compliant, real ID compliant state. It also requires us to verify Social Security numbers at renewals. Today, if that Social Security number verifies when you come into DMV, we usually don't do it again, another check. We've assumed it's been done once and it's fine. The regulations require additional checks to confirm that it still is a compliant or an acceptable Social Security number tied to that individual. There's some card design security type features that we are actually in the process of putting in place with a new vendor. And our employees would be subject to both name-based and fingerprint-based criminal background checks in the future. We do name-based ones today with our employees. We have to up the ante a bit and do the fingerprints in the future. It's also part of the federal regulations. Now, there are alternative ways to prove your identity and gain access to federal buildings. And the U.S. passport and U.S. passport card is the most common. But there's also a permanent resident card, consular report of birth abroad, certificate of naturalization. There's a lot of different documents. Not everyone would necessarily qualify for each of those, but as an alternative, there are other options. So as we've looked at options moving forward, we assume that a number of people already have valid, acceptable documents for purposes of accessing federal buildings or airports in the future. So as far as compliance goes, there are 26 jurisdictions. There's all the 50 states, but also District Columbia and some territories that are part of this. But 26 jurisdictions are deemed compliant today. There are 30 jurisdictions, like Oregon, that are in that non-compliant or not yet compliant category. 8 of them have the June 6th extension that we have. 18 have until October 10th of 2017. And those 18, what I've been told, the distinction between those and the 8 is that the ones that have the longer period of time have given more of a absolute, yes, we will comply. Ours has been kind of tentative, and it's subject to statutory changes and those types of things. So it's more of a tenuous extension. There are 4 states that have been deemed non-compliant. Now that total.
So in February of this year, at the direction of the Emergency Board in 2016, DMV issued a report of options regarding Real ID. And so we issued a report that included those, included four different options. They included full compliance, so DMV began issuing only Real ID compliant cards. Option number two was to offer a choice. We would issue both Real ID compliant cards and non-compliant cards at the customer's choice. The third option was to issue what are called enhanced driver licenses. Enhanced driver licenses are it's sort of similar to Real ID. So they're a card that will get you on an airplane. They will get you across a land border with Mexico or Canada. They have an RFID chip in them, but they are technically not a Real ID document. Washington State issues the enhanced driver license, but it's technically not a Real ID document. And then the fourth option was just status quo. We're not Real ID compliant today, and we make the choice to not be Real ID compliant into the future, and folks will need to use other documents. So those were the four options in that report. Option number two is the one contained in Senator Hansel's Senate Bill 374, and again, that's the customer has a choice. You can either come in, provide the extra documents, do the extra checks, and you'll get a Real ID compliant card. Or you may choose not to continue with what we issue today, a standard driver license. You still need to show legal presence, have a social security number, all those things, but it doesn't rise up to that next level of Real ID compliance. So that's the item contained in Senate Bill 374. A further issue within the report is to whether to push forward with our legacy system or to do this within the STP, which you've just heard quite a bit about. And in the report, there are some fiscal estimates about what it would cost to become Real ID compliant or enhanced driver license compliant, options one, two, or three under that report. And they're significant. They're in the multi-million dollars. But please understand that those are estimates based on the legacy system and not estimates based on the STP. The reason we wrote the report that way is because as of February, we didn't have a signed vendor. We still don't have a signed vendor, so we can't guarantee that option. So we priced it out under the legacy system. But certainly under the choice, I think, may become quite clear to the body if the choice is to become Real ID compliant. And that is because under the legacy system, the amount of coding that would have to be done will take about 3 years. STP, which part of the requirements with the vendor that we put out there was to have a system that is configurable to be Real ID compliant. So that was contemplated as we did the RFP process with Fast Enterprises. And that also, as you saw from an earlier slide, in about 3 years from now, we should have an up and running driver license and ID card issuance system. So you could do the multi-million dollar under the old system or with STP. It's sort of baked into the product where we'd already be purchasing. So that puts us into summer of 2020 under either option there. This next slide just shows, again, that the option of Real ID or a non-compliant card under option two. So again, the non-compliant card is the standard, the card that we issue today. It would have to contain on the front of the card some kind of verbiage on the order of not valid for federal identification purposes, something like that. That's an absolute requirement of Real ID. On the Real ID compliant card, there has to be some marking that Homeland Security would approve. Typically, that looks something like a black star or something like that on the face of the card so that when TSA looks at it, they can see right away that's a compliant card and a card from a compliant state. So those are the two different card options. And then again, Senate Bill 374, which is now the A. Engrossed version coming out of Senate Business and Transportation down to this committee, does several things. First of all, it removes those legal barriers to compliance. So as Tom mentioned, there's a statute, there are statutes on the books today saying the agencies shall not spend money to become Real ID compliant. So the first thing 374 does is lift those restrictions. But then it goes forward and specifically directs the agency to issue both compliant and non-compliant cards and goes through the various requirements to get there, to get to Real ID compliance. Several of the things Tom mentioned, the scanning of the documents that folks bring in, storing those documents for a number of years, checking against the electronic systems to ensure validity of certain documents and what your status is with another state. And then it also indicates that DMV has to do rule writing to assess a fee for a Real ID compliant card, and we have to calculate that fee in a way that would cover the costs for implementation and issuance going forward. So the idea behind the bill is that the costs would be covered over time based on the increased fee for getting a Real ID compliant card.
Ms. Joyce, I'm going to interrupt you here for a second. So you were talking about the process of generating a Real ID and the extra documentation and the storage and everything else. You did not touch on the security surrounding the preservation of those documents once the state has all of that information in their possession.
In the bill itself, there are some provisions built into that. One has to do with the limiting the sharing of the digital photos that we collect only to law enforcement and our agency's purposes, but not shared with other states. So it really tightens it down. Also, on those identity source documents I mentioned, the images of birth certificates and passports and other pretty sensitive documents would be limited to only our use and potentially sharing with the issuing agency. So State Department potentially with a passport. We could share an image of that person's passport with them to confirm they actually did issue that particular document. But it doesn't even allow law enforcement, let alone other states, to have access to those documents. That goes beyond the what's required within the federal law and regulations, but it does tighten it down. I think it gets to the point that you're making as far as, I think, access.
Well, the question I'm trying to ask, and I appreciate you talking about the sharing and access by police agencies. I'm thinking more that every once in a while we see a distressing headline that that some agency has left a laptop in the backseat of a car and somebody's acquired several thousand Social Security numbers. I'm worrying about somebody being able to suddenly acquire several thousand birth certificates, Social Security numbers, and photos of individual Oregonians.
Co-Chair Gomberg, yes, that is definitely a concern. That's part of the lockdown we're going to have as we move into this particular set of documents. These are much more sensitive than many of the other applications and things that we collect today. So we'll definitely have to lock those down as best we can with technology, but also procedures and protocols with our employees. Part of the compliance package we must submit to gain compliance from the Department of Homeland Security is a security plan. And it's pretty extensive what they're looking for there. And it's not just our systems and not just our employees, but any contractors that have access to these images and the process. So besides the background checks and all those types of things that also are part of that security package we need to submit, that'll be an important component of what we submit to gain compliance. So, yes, I mean, it is obviously a very important piece, a component of this. The bill doesn't necessarily call out security, but we understand that goes along with the responsibilities for this.
All right, thank you. Please continue.
So, with that, if that bill were to pass, Senate Bill 374A or something like it, we believe that would get the state of Oregon an enforcement extension from Homeland Security into October. The way Homeland Security is doing extensions right now, they're a maximum of 1 year, and October 5th or 7th, I believe, is the one that all the other states have. So if we were to pass a bill indicating proactively that, yes, we will become Real ID compliant, we believe it highly likely we would then get an extension into October, and then as long as we were making progress towards full compliance, we would continue to gain extensions up to the final sort of drop-dead date, for lack of a better term, of October of 2020.
So
So really, just to reiterate, these are some of the main systems that we have to have as far as electronic verification for birth certificates, passports, checking with other states, re-verifying Social Security numbers again. There'll be more of that. There's a cost associated with that, but we would build that into our issuance processes. Retaining
I'm
copies.
Sorry, Tom,
yes.
I need each of those or a collection of those?
Co-Chair Gomberg, whatever is required for that original issuance or that renewal of the driving privilege or the ID card, that set of materials, including the application, is all supposed to be imaged. So you wouldn't get a passport and a immigration document from the same person. You get one or the other. Okay. As part of that package of documents. But it's the package of documents we need to retain securely, as you pointed out.
All right, thank you.
So again, retaining those documents, card design, we've got some work with our new vendor, not FAST, but another vendor that actually does our driver license issuance, to come up with the design that we need to and the information that has to be on each card and the security markings, do the criminal background checks on our employees, and submit a package. And that package is actually quite a bit of work to put together. It's quite a bit of material that we have to compile for that. So I put this up mainly to show you the 2020 date, because that is the second rollout that we have planned before the service transformation program. That's the driver system. We want to do that after we finished digital imaging. Other documents, we're still doing microfilm at DMV, a lot of our transactions. So getting that finished next year, as well as the new vendor to issue our driver's licenses on board by next summer, early fall of next year, those are more prerequisites to the second rollout for the service transformation program, which is the driver system, which has all the driving privileges, suspensions, and things like that that are part of a person's driving record. So that system would roll out currently, what we're hoping to have finished is July of 2020. Tentatively. Again, we don't have a contract, we don't have a schedule locked down, but just from what we've seen from this particular vendor, Fast Enterprises, they take about 16 to 18 months for each rollout, and we're anticipating it could be the summer of 2020.
Co-Chair.
Yes, Representative Meek.
Thank you, sir. It looks like Fast has been, a lot of the states that are in compliance now, mm-hmm. they have their programs operating there.
Yes,
currently. Were they part of that, them getting on board or becoming compliant?
Co-Chair Gomberg, yes. Representative Meek, that is true. One of the states we visited, and we mentioned a couple that we visited last year, one was just going live with Real ID about the same time we were there. And so this vendor has that experience. They understand the requirements and know how to, especially that linkages with other, these national systems, that verification process, making sure that it's linked as best you can. So good experience.
Follow up, Dan. Sure. So then it looks like with the STP that we should be able to meet our obligation. My main question is that the Department of Homeland Security is going to grant us these. Have you seen them once we set down the path? Are they going to give an 8-month extension or a 1 year or 2 year if they know that we're really working towards
Co-Chair Gomberg, Representative Meek, we've seen when states have shown progress. That's the key word they always share with us. Have you shown progress? If you've made a commitment to do something, have you followed through? We anticipate they will continue to give one-year extensions, okay. And they've been on an October to October kind of a cycle, except for this last one. They've also indicated that they don't plan to wait a year to hear from us. So in those states like us that have a ways to go to comply, they're going to want more regular check-ins with us to see if we are making the progress that we've committed to make. And it's more than just, as Amy mentioned, it's not just removing the prohibitions to compliance, it's the enabling legislation that's part of this particular bill.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Co-Chair.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In answer to your question, Representative Meek, this really, as they said, staff have brought updates type of a thing periodically, and in the
Last September's Ledge Days, they did bring an update. Some of you weren't in the legislature yet. And following that, I met with co-chair Johnson and said, wow, the axe is about ready to drop. We in Oregon are not going to be able to board domestic flights using our driver's license. We'll have to have a passport or something else. In my district, I began to think, I've got constituents that work across the river in Washington at the Hanford Reservation. They were going to have some issues there. Any federal courthouse or dam or whatever, I don't know all the whole list, people were not going to be able to use a driver's license as an identity. So we began, I talked to the chair, I'm willing to submit and put together a bill. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but the mere fact that we now had a piece of legislation dropped eventually, I think was instrumental in having the Homeland Security extend, because we were in fact showing progress. Is that correct? There was something, I believe you said that earlier, if I may ask the staff.
Yeah, Chair Gomberg and Senator Hansel, that's right. When we appeared before the committee in, I believe it was September of 2016, and the extension at that time was about to expire in early October, the expectation that we'd learned from Homeland Security was they needed a clear indication that the legislature was at least going to entertain in the 17th session legislation to become compliant. And so a number of legislators submitted letters, including, I believe, Senator Hansel, that they intended to drop bills to become Real ID compliant. So that helped get us the extension into June. And I mean, the June 7th extension date is not coincidental relative to the legislative calendar.
If I may continue, and I know Representative Nierman had a bill that he was willing, that was not quite as extensive, but we talked and he said, look, if your bill moves, that'll be good. But a couple of things that just for way of background, if you look at those states that have gone with the optional or a choice, about 30%, as I understand it, on the average, of people opt to do this. So it's not everybody, which cuts down on the cost. If a person has any type of concern about documents or anything, they don't have to do it. I kind of view it like a vanity license plate. If you want it, you're going to pay a little more for it, but you don't have to get it if you don't want it. So this would give the option. And then the other thing, timing-wise, is that we have this brand-new computer system that's coming here. Let's get the vendor to, as I think Amy has said, bake in. It'll be a part of the package to do Real ID, rather than buying a system and then have to retrofit it later on. So all the timing has kind of come together, and part of the reason why Senate Bill 374 is before us, or will be, is that because of the fiscal on it. And but I've been working on the Senate side with Chair Beyer, who was not a big fan of it before, but realizes that the time has come that we need to do it, and we built in different things, including the cost containment and making it optional. So I think it's a bill whose time has come, and I really appreciate the staff. And I think for all of Oregonians, it's something that we really need to do this session.
Thanks, Senator. Greg, do you have something to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I just wanted to get some clarity around the fiscal aspect of this. And in the report, for option two, for the first 3 years of implementation, there were costs estimated in the range of about $4 million. And then there was a tail that included about 13 FTE. And that's for implementing option two with the legacy system. So you've been talking about implementing it under the STP system, and you suggested that it would be significantly less in the report. So just to clarify, since
this is a budget committee, what you're saying is that the cost to implement Real ID, meaning the technology piece of it, would be less than $4 million. And then I would just like you to clarify in terms of the ongoing FTE positions that would be required to implement this under the new system. Could you just speak to those issues?
Co-Chair Gomberg, LFO staff. From what we know right now, with our contract negotiations with the vendor that's going to bring the system in, we have no reason to believe it's going to cost us more than what we've estimated, and it's in our package that we talked about yesterday and earlier today. We anticipate there will be some staffing, unless you want long waits at DMV field offices, and I don't think you do. There's going to be some staffing implications, but we also want to give the STP implementation a chance to take effect and see what efficiency we might gain there. So that would be the 2019 legislative session, because we're looking at July of 2020. We don't anticipate needing more positions for Real ID in the next 2 years, because we'll be building the systems, we'll be building the interfaces, we'll be preparing that compliance package, all those pieces. We don't anticipate hiring more people because we won't be issuing the Real ID compliant card until midway through the next 2 year period. All right, so it's July of 2020, it's midway through. So if we are going to ask for additional positions, it would be in the 2019 legislative session. We'd be back and ask. It's not a definite at this point, because we want to give a chance for our new vehicle system to be installed and see what efficiencies we achieve in that process. We may decide to redeploy some of our headquarters employees to field offices because the workload has shifted and we don't need as many at headquarters and we need more in the field offices. That may be one of the things we end up doing to take advantage of some savings and efficiencies that potentially could come from the service transformation program.
So, a follow-up?
Just a point of clarification. So the report specifically suggests that the cost to implement this under the new system would be significantly less. But what I just heard you say is that you wouldn't expect to spend more than the estimate that you've given, and that's a little bit different. Could you clarify?
Co-Chair Gomberg, LFO staff, it's to be determined. But I'm just telling you what we know right now from our contract negotiations and what we've seen with the experience of this vendor in other states. We don't anticipate it causing us to spend more in that deployment. Now, we may get into it and we realize there's some interfaces that we have to write ourselves to connect to these other systems that then would connect up to the new vendor's system. If that's the case and it's significant, we may be back to you in an emergency board during the 17-19 session. But at this point, we don't know enough to ask you for any more resources for Real ID compliance in the current or the upcoming legislative session.
And if I may, Chair Gomberg and Mr. Jolivet, just to be clear which description of money we're talking about, the $4 million-ish discussed in the report. I think what Tom is saying is that assuming we sign a contract with FAST and implement Real ID with that, that $4 million completely goes away. That the estimate from yesterday to implement STP would include Real ID compliance as part of that package if that bill passes, so that the $4 million would completely go away, just to be clear.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Senator.
So what we're really, I think, before us in this legislative session is the passing legislation that will move us forward in the Real ID compliance pathway, which will set aside our prohibition beforehand. It will allow you then to build into the new software program a Real ID, and in 2 years we'll be able to have a better handle on what those expenses are, and if there are any, then that would be the budget in which we would build it into.
That is correct.
Okay.
Representative Gregg.
Hi, thank you, Co-Chair Obama. Just curious, there's been a change in administration and since you started all of this work, and it sounds like we're relying on these extensions. I'm just wondering how flexible are the rules on extensions, and is there a chance that our desire for these could be held against us in some way?
Co-Chair Gumberg, Representative Reardon, we've been in close contact with program staff at the Department of Homeland Security. I was on a conference call 2 weeks ago with the lead person over Real ID for within the Department of Homeland Security, and he reiterated that, again, that word progress. If states are making a commitment and are making progress toward compliance, he fully expects extensions to be granted. Now, and he's saying into the future. Now, he doesn't have a crystal ball, and he can't completely confirm that, but mm-hmm. he indicated he had spoke to the secretary directly as far as this program, and the intent was to get states to comply as quickly as possible. Obviously, they're anxious mm-hmm. to get all the states into that compliant status, but if we come forward with, we have a three-year plan, I have no reason to believe they would deny us continued extensions. I think it's actually they're going to say, great, it's about time Oregon came around. That's the message I expect to get back from them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Representative Nierman.
So I'd like to, so thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask some questions about the difference between the non-compliant card and the compliant card in the Senator Hansel's bill there. So there's no distinction that makes in the person. So if I qualify for one card, I qualify for both cards, right? Just looking at me as a person, right? There's no status that I could have or any kind of blemish on me that would say, no, Mr. Nierman, you only qualify for the non-compliant card. You don't qualify for the real ID.
So, right? Co-Chair Gomber, Representative Nierman, it's going to depend on what documents you're willing to present
sure,
as well.
But that's not me now, so I'll get to that in a second.
But that is part of it.
Okay.
If you don't want to bring those documents back to DMV to present them to us for imaging purposes, you're not going to qualify for the compliant card. You'll get the standard card, which is a non-compliant card. There are individuals around immigration as far as the permanency of their immigrant status and their ability to stay in this country, whether someone might be compliant or not. And we're still working through the specifics around that. It's very complicated around immigration law. So we're doing some further research into that as well. But that would be maybe a difference in the person, if you're getting at
yeah,
that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So then with the documents then, so the SB 1080 requirements require me to bring X documents in, and the Real ID requires those same documents. So at least the documents, then there's no difference in that, really, is there, other than maybe the exception that you just talked about, if I have some sort of immigration thing, and we'll just push that off to the side and not consider that. But the documents are only the same. The only difference at that point, then, is whether or not you image the documents and save them, right?
Co-Chair Gomber, Representative Nierman, I think you're correct in that assumption that you just made. We may not do the verification electronically of some of these systems. That's still to be worked out.
Because that's not in the 1080 requirements. You could skip that then, say,
potentially.
So if I were to come to you and say, I have all the documents you need, but I'm not willing to give you my thumbprint. I'm 1080 qualified, but I'm not Real ID qualified. So mm-hmm. you could give me the non-compliant card then, right?
Yes.
So even though I have all the documents, and even if I was willing to have my documents imaged, but I'm not willing to give you a thumbprint for some other weird reason or something, right?
Well, Co-Chair Gomber, Representative Nierman, we're not asking the applicants to provide the thumbprints. That's the employees that are doing the criminal background check. Those are our employees that would be subject to that. There's no...
Oh, okay. So there is some sort of... you said there's some sort of... identification thing that you hook up to for Real ID that's part of the requirements, right? If you go back to your slide on that's the requirements. Not the document requirements, but there's a...
I'm not sure we have anything other than that.
Okay, all right. Then if that's the case, then that's fine.
Representative Nierman, that is part of the choice. You may qualify for the compliant card and just don't want to go through that process or pay the extra fee that would be part of this the bill allows.
Then, so that's the only real difference then is keeping an image of my documents and paying a fee. That's the only difference between the two, right? with the possible exception of the immigration thing.
And the checking of these other systems that we may or may not actually use, you know, for the standard card that we issue.
Do you pay per transaction on the checking of those?
They all have some kind of a charge built in.
Per transaction?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions?
So, Chair Gomer, to follow up with that question, the difference, though, between those two IDs is if I brought the non-compliant or the standard card, mm-hmm. I couldn't board a TSA. I couldn't get through the airport.
To go to Seattle.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So,
with that card. Mm-hmm. With that card. I might have to bring my passport.
As of right now, that's the October 2020 date. As long as we receive these extensions, the Oregon driver's license, current issued one today, should still be accepted at federal facilities and at airports even after that January 22nd, 2018 date. It's really that one out in October of 2020 that they're saying is not going to change. I imagine if a large enough state, California, for example, came forward and said we need a few more months, they might just get it. But right now, that's a pretty hard and fast date.
Yes, Senator, thank you.
One thing that we also built into the bill, we felt it was fair. Let's say that 2020 is coming up and you only have 1 year left, your license will expire in 2021, and you have to buy a new ID, it would only be good for 1 year. We built into it that it would actually, once you acquire it, it goes for the 6 years. Mm-hmm. So there was a fairness issue there depending upon when yours expired. Good.
All right, we've got about 5 minutes left before the House needs to leave. I don't want to cut any of the questions short. I think we are running out of slides, aren't we?
And Co-Chair Gomberg, the last slide I had was these dates. And so June 6th, coming up very soon, that's when our current extension expires. They told us we'd have 30 days, and they came up with July 10th as that date. I'm not quite sure of their math, but I think it's after the 4th of July weekend is what they've picked, is July 10th, as a grace period for those states that have not received the extension. So if the closer we get to June 6th and we submit our request, it's possible we may fall into that grace period. But they're saying not longer than July 10th. The next one, of course, January 22nd of 2018 is when it takes effect at airports, and then October 1st of 2020, we just mentioned that. So those are the key dates to kind of keep in your mind here.
There is a date, too, is there not, for facilities that predates getting on a plane that you can't use to get on a flight?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Senator Hansel, and that's effect today. For those states that are non-compliant, the four that I mentioned earlier, they are subject to that today. Certain military bases, nuclear power plants, those types of things. A person cannot present their Washington, driver's license or whatever to gain access. That stays in place. That's not changing.
What about for us from Oregon, though?
As long as we have the extension, we're going to be fine.
Okay.
They'll continue to accept the Oregon card.
And so, Co-Chair Gomberg and Senator Hansel, the converse of that is if June 6th comes and goes and there's no change in Oregon law and the grace period comes and goes on July 11, an Oregon driver license is not going to get you into military bases, nuclear facilities, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Any other questions?
I just want to make a comment to thank Senator Hansel for bringing forward that bill. That's going to be real helpful. So
well, actually, I was going to, after we leave for a House session at 2 o'clock, I was going to invite Senator Hansel to testify to the rest of the committee.
Come up with this stuff?
Any other questions? All right. Thank you so very much. I'm going to go ahead and conclude the public hearing on 5540. Is there anything else for the good of the order? All right, then we will reconvene here tomorrow, and we are adjourned.